Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets in the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I'm your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. 2018, Chad Riley.
I'm here, I'm so fresh, I'm so clean, I'm so ready.
That's true, you did shower before you got here, so
true.
That's good to hear.
Happens once a week, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the first episode of the 2018 year, and we are excited to get things kicked off by having a great show that talks about all the things that were horrible about 2017.
Yeah.
So
this is the Out With The Old show.
It is, but we have a special guest returning within a matter of like a few weeks too. We just apparently there was so much love for him out there that we had to bring him back. Mr. Spencer Williams.
Back by popular demand.
That's true. That is so true.
Well, I mean, your mom called several times to the show, so I mean, it's just
hey,
you better let her back on.
Thanks, Mom.
So stick around as we have a lot of stuff to talk about.
That was so good.
The Filmlosophers are presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live each week in a padded room at VGB Studios.
Can't trust us too far.
It's true, especially with Spencer here now.
Yeah.
You can access fresh content anytime on Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, Libsyn, Audioboom, or Player FM. New episodes debut each Wednesday morning. Don't forget that we're starved for attention. We really are. So hit us up on social media and tell us what you think about our latest content. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophers.
I mean, it's got to be telling at some level that in the first minute and a half of this broadcast, we've hit up showers, Spencer's mom, and padded rooms. So, star for attention, definitely. We need some help.
Last but not least, you can access all of our previous episodes at VGBstudios.com alongside other amazing podcasts like Video Game Bang and Me, Myself, and I. So like we said, we're going to take a look at 2017. Obviously, the new year is upon us, 2018. Gentlemen, have you made your New Year's resolutions?
Well, I did. A few years ago, my resolution was to not make resolutions, and I'm doing so great with that.
That is like wisdom.
That's
beyond
cheating,
smart,
though, because that's like
that's why
all you have to do is just be lazy and remember to
maybe
not.
Allows them to be flexible.
Well, because I feel like if you're gonna start something, you shouldn't wait till the new year. Just do it.
But you're not doing anything.
No, I'm doing other things just throughout the year.
So you are making resolutions,
not New Year's resolutions, though.
But they are resolutions.
But they're not New Year's resolutions.
Are they in the new year?
But they happen at all the time, so not really.
It's a continual resolution making and fulfilling or breaking cycle for you.
So, yeah, so essentially, you didn't make the first resolution, which means your resolution hasn't been kept.
Well, I guess it really depends on your definition of when is a new year. Is like December a new year?
Why would December be a new year?
Because what if I make a resolution in December?
Then that was last year. We're talking about this year.
Yeah, but when is this year this year?
On to simpler matters, hopefully.
I just remembered why we brought Spencer back. This is brilliant. You don't need me at all.
Oh, no, we couldn't do this without you.
I mean, that was like a Spaceballs moment right there.
That was...
When will now be now?
Now has already happened. did we mention we're a film podcast? Just saying.
Allegedly.
Chad, how about you? Any big resolutions that you made?
You know, I don't really not make resolutions, but I don't really do... I don't do resolutions so much as I do more like themes. Mm. So...
Is that why you bought all that party... that pirate gear that was at Party City?
Yarr!
I knew it.
The sparkly kind, too.
Year of the
Pirates.
Because
why not?
Fabulous
Bedazzled
party.
Pirate. That sounds Arr,
that booty.
That sounds really dead. The bedazzled peg leg.
Exactly.
Anyhow, no, I do more like themes.
Mm.
And I haven't really settled on a 2018 specific theme just yet. I like to run a little bit behind schedule with, you know, big important things like resolutions. So I haven't gotten there yet.
Interesting. I think the one resolution that I had in mind for 2018, and as cliche as it sounds, it's still one that I think I can possibly work to attain, and that's to see a bit more of the independent film circuit rather than spend most of my time and money into just watching all mainstream films. I would like to like dive a little bit more into that. I know we've talked about it a couple times. We've mentioned it. And looking back, after doing the prep for today's show, I was like, man, I missed out on a lot of indie films that got a lot of attention.
Yep.
So I think as I prep for this show and as I was looking through all the stuff that we'd gone through, I'm like, there's so many films that had I brought it to our attention and say, hey, we should have seen this one, do the review on this one. By the time it actually made it to possibly mainstream, it was already like a month or two out and it wasn't really. So I think that's one of my big resolutions for this year.
I think to piggyback off of what you've said, this is, you know, I don't know why I'm saying this out loud because then it kind of commits us to doing something that we might not be ready to do. But we've talked before off mic about doing one or more film festival.
That's true.
Trips at some point during the year so that we're just like in that zone, because a lot of the independent films you're talking about, they actually debut early in the year in order at film festivals in order to get distribution and come out later in the year in preparation for awards season. So a lot of the films that are out now that are wanting to get, you know, best this and best that and you know, whatever, they actually, most of them debuted earlier this year or even last year. Now it's 2018. See, I'm all discombobulated.
2016.
Some of them were 2016, some of them 2017, and they were debuting at the festivals to get a distributor.
True.
So I think that we should definitely get on that.
That's true. But
resolved. There we go.
There we go.
Look, I have one now. Thank you.
Who said resolutions were dumb? Oh, wait, Spencer did.
I didn't say that. Rewind, folks. I didn't say that.
As we said, we were going to look at the 2017. See, now it's even difficult to say 2017.
Is it, though?
It is for me.
2017. That was easy.
You had a whole year to learn how to say it.
I never caught up. I skipped that class. Oh, so now we take a look at back at the year 2017 and all the movies.
Year in review.
Exactly. And we're going to take a look at all the movies that debuted throughout the course of the year and honestly just judge them as much as we can, because if there's one thing that we're good at, it's reviewing and judging movies from a educational perspective.
Oh, especially the ones that we haven't seen. I'll judge the daylights out of it.
So as we said, 2017... That's true. I mean, that's not even like remotely hinting at just some fun. Yeah, we totally like, oh, that looks like Garbo. And we
won't. For sure. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But then who
Ask
hasn't?
Me why I haven't seen The Greatest Showman yet.
Why haven't you seen The Greatest Showman?
Because I don't want to see it because I don't think it makes sense as a musical. Now, I've heard from people that have seen it that really enjoyed it and thought it was great. And I've separately heard a couple of the songs that are in the movie.
Oh, I love the soundtrack.
And they're really well done songs. Yeah. I just don't think it works as as those two elements together. It doesn't appeal to me, so I don't want to see it. I probably will someday, but.
And I think that's one of the biggest.
See, there we go. Judged. Unwatched and judged. Boom. There you go.
I think that's one of the like bad aspects of movies like that that make the attempt to be a musical and they have incredible music, but the film doesn't hit the actual expectations of what you expect.
Yeah, that's one of those weird anomalies, because I am all for, like, let's bring back more musicals. I think that using the musical format is something that used to be really popular, 50s, 60s, a little bit in the 70s, but really not much.
Yeah.
And they've had, like, fits and starts ever since then of, like, one or two that try, some of them to very positive effect. I would argue, like, a Moulin Rouge came out of nowhere, was a musical and actually worked if you could get with the whole vibe that it was doing.
Yeah.
But then you had, you had some other ones that didn't really go so well. And for whatever reason, I've prejudged The Greatest Showman as being in that latter category. That it's like, I like that you tried. I just don't think it's going to go well.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to spend my money on it.
Yeah, I kind of judged the movie too solely on the fact that Amazon was sending me boxes advertising them. And I was like,
true.
This is too much.
Holiday season packaging. They got a lot of promotion out of Amazon.
Yeah, no joke. Because seeing as how lazy most people are nowadays and how everybody's entire Christmas shopping all was done from Amazon, everybody saw that box, that red box with The Greatest Showman on the side and plastered all over else places. And so, yeah. But thankfully, we saw quite a few other movies aside from The Greatest Showman. So let's just be honest. I think we can all agree that 2017 really wasn't the best year for movies. I mean, it had its high points, but there weren't many of them.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that there were surprisingly few, like, true standout movie-going experiences.
Yeah.
A lot of movies came out that were adequate. They were decent. They weren't bad. But having, like, milestone moments, like, register in your brain and sit there forever kind of moments, very, very few.
Quick side note.
For me.
Quick side note, the other day we had this with the gentleman in here and one other person. We had the conversation about the quality of Hallmark movies. And
oh, Spencer, get ready. This bus is coming for you.
It
is coming for you right now.
We were sitting there talking and explaining to somebody who happens to be a woman. And mind you, most women are you know, predestined to live in the world of Hallmark movie infamy for God knows how long.
Never mind. Eddie hit himself with his own bus.
It's all good.
Oh my God.
No, but the issue I found...
Deflect.
...was that we were talking about it.
Hallmark movies.
And then somebody said something about a Hallmark movie that was on Netflix, and a certain someone over here, Mr. Spencer Williams, immediately said, "Oh, you mean The Christmas Prince?" And we all turned and looked and were like, "What are you doing? We have put our names on saying that you are a connoisseur of certain types of movies. We actually put you on the podcast."
Okay.
And you're over here talking about, were you one of those 18 people who saw that movie over and over that Netflix had to reach out
That's
and say
the
who
only
hurt
reason
you?
Why I know
I
about it.
I doubt
because
that
Netflix
very much.
Sent out a tweet and I read that tweet.
Whatever, Spencer, whatever. So anyway,
yeah, he read the tweet.
Yeah, wink wink.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Guys.
Hey, I have to confess.
Okay.
I did some working remotely from my home state of Indiana. We live in California, for anybody who doesn't know. I went home for the holidays and my sister's wedding, right? And I worked for my company from home, and I was at a relative's house, and they, in the afternoon, would watch Hallmark Channel Christmas movies. So I did happen to catch a few scenes of a few movies over the course of a week.
Yeah, but a few scenes. I mean, you didn't sit there and have to watch any of them through and through and apparently know them by name like Spencer did.
True.
And
I didn't
and understand
even watch this.
Like, true, I don't know any of their
the
names.
The conversation almost turned solely to those two. Like they were about to have like a BFF moment, like, "Oh my gosh. And do you remember when he just came out and he proposed?" And she was like, "No, I can't because you're a prince." And it was
I haven't seen this movie yet.
I highly doubt that.
No,
yet?
I said yes.
Oh, you said yet.
I'm going to watch it because it sounds ridiculous. But
oh, now this is true. Spencer is a B-movie connoisseur.
Yeah,
in addition to being a film connoisseur, he's specifically a B-movie connoisseur.
This is not a B-movie. This is like a Z-movie. This is a movie that puts you to sleep. Every time my wife puts on any of these movies, I'm like, "Sure, sweetheart, I'll watch the movie with you." And I knock out like
okay,
that.
Okay, but if you can hop
That's
in
her plan.
At the right point on some of these movies, they are just astoundingly ridiculous. Like, I don't know why people watch them.
Agreed. I don't know, Spence. Why do you watch them along with the rest of your people, apparently?
Not for the same reason they're watching them. I find them hilarious, but some people
so
take
you do,
them
you
seriously.
The plot thickens here. Apparently he's seen several rather than just the one.
No, I've hopped into a few Hallmark movies, yes. I feel like this wasn't the topic of the podcast.
I was going to say, this year in review is turning into the Inquisition of Spencer.
I'm just saying, and I state this for the record, as soon as we go off the air, Spencer, we're going to have a talk. Okay? But as I said, you know, 2017 wasn't the best year for movies, but it doesn't mean that it didn't have a few gems. So we're going to take a close look at these past 12 months of film and dive deep, like we normally do, into what worked, what didn't, and ask the big question. Was 2017 good to movies? So we've actually isolated a few key categories, if you will. We've kind of created some generalized, you know, categories and bins to pose the question, if you will, of the films of this past year. And we're each actually going to go around and kind of throw out our thoughts and whatnot. So
it's sort of a mix of like the Oscars and the Razzies.
Exactly.
Some of them are good categories and some of them are bad categories.
This might be more like 70% Razzie, 30% Oscars. Mm. But hey, you know, who knows? So why don't we
get
why don't we get things kicked off and start out with the best performance in role? So throughout the year, there had been several different films that had posed as, standout performance for so-and-so, or
right,
so-and-so did an incredible job in this film, or so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. And like we said, 2017, it wasn't the best year in terms of cinema, so that was a little bit of like kind of finding a needle in a really big haystack for me.
This category actually has my longest list of responses.
Really?
I have dual awardees and an honorable mention.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well then, since this is Spencer's returning, maybe last,
after the Inquisition,
why don't we have Spencer start it off? So why don't you give us a couple of your best performances in terms of roles?
Okay. So this one was kind of weird because I was shocked I picked this person.
Mm.
But I have to give it to two people. One is Gal Gadot for Wonder Woman because she just made that movie like work. And now she's like the golden sheep for DC. Because
she's the only one that's working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she did like a fantastic job.
Agreed.
Was very impressed when I saw that movie. I was not expecting anything from that movie when I went into theaters.
I don't think anybody was.
Shocked.
I was expecting one thing, and that was an extended electric guitar riff. And still so good. So good. But she's phenomenal as well. I don't want to take away from her performance in that role because really does, as iconic as the character is, and as much as they so far have not screwed that character up like they've screwed up all the other ones, she still is the reason to watch it.
Yeah. And if there's anything significant about this role particularly, it's that this was the single shining light that DC had to hold on to from their entrance with BVS and talking about it and then adding in Patty Jenkins. And so much was going for this that you were hoping that if this fails, there's nothing that DC can do to ever repair whatever they had because this was their standout performer in BVS. So I have to agree because I do actually have Gal Gadot on my list as well. And mind you, that was the reasonings for me. It was so necessary for her role in my mind to be as big of a shining star as she was. Not only for this film, but for this franchise. Because I honestly and truly believe if Gal Gadot and the rest of the team could not pull off this film, I don't think there would have been a Justice League. I don't think there would have been, like, you know, the successes that they're predicting for their future of the franchise. I think that, like, sharp left turn into a tree would have possibly kind of derailed their entire direction for a lot of their stuff that they had going.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they'd only have like a half decent Superman and a Harley Quinn. That's all that they would have. If Wonder Woman tanked and Justice League tanked, well, I think if Justice League tanked, you'd still have a half decent Aquaman. I think that Aquaman had a good showing in that film. because he was a tease of something more that you might be able to see later. And they might totally flop on the solo film. Mm-hmm. That has yet to be seen. We haven't seen a trailer for it yet to know kind of what tone it even has. But his role in the ensemble was a pretty standout role for him, and specifically for the character. Mm-hmm. That character has never been cooler. because that character is not usually very cool. But yeah, I think if Wonder Woman had tanked, they would have Harley Quinn that they're trying to salvage out of Suicide Squad and put her in like five other movies just so that she's still there because yeah. people liked her and Margot Robbie did an incredible job.
Yeah.
And they still have a halfway decent Superman minus the whole killing him and bringing him back thing.
All right, Spence, you said you had one more?
Yeah, and this was the weird one. I have to give it to Sally Hawkins for her role in The Shape of Water because I found that movie very off-putting, but I believe that that woman was in love with that fish man so much.
Like, Spencer,
was it just the fact that she was in love with a fish man that got you excited?
No, like...
You said that with moment, such passion.
In this moment, you are my spirit animal. I actually, Sally Hawkins was the first person on my list as well.
Cool.
Not because she sold me on being in love with a fish man, but because her character is mute and has to communicate with emotion and physicality and sign language. But not only like emotion, physicality, and sign language, but she's like, she's mute and she's pretty passive. So it has to be subtle. I thought there was so much accomplished nuance in her performance, and like you said, there were things about the film specifically regarding her character and what you watch about her morning routine that were very off-putting to me and I didn't want to see them. But those things aside, I still thought, even above and beyond the other name on my list, she would get, if I had to narrow it down to one, I would give it to her.
Right.
All right, Chad, what about you?
Okay, so Sally Hawkins was my first pick.
Yeah.
And then decently close second, mostly for the novelty effect of it, I put James Franco from The Disaster Artist. I don't think that it's necessarily an Oscar-worthy performance. I think that if he were to get awards, and he probably will, if he gets awards, I don't know what that means for the world. Just
James
because
Franco gets awards?
Yeah, just because he's embodying Tommy Wiseau, and there's something that feels just so wrong about that.
Tommy Wiseau and Oscar doesn't seem synonymous in your mind?
Oscar for playing Tommy Wiseau in a parody movie about Tommy Wiseau's terrible movie. Like, there's something very meta and satisfying, but also very off-putting and, like, wrong with the structure of the universe about that statement.
Okay, but I would like to make an argument against that, though, because, like, we've seen Tommy Wiseau and just his man, like, I couldn't replicate him as well as James Franco did.
I agree.
That was amazing.
I agree. Wait, that's why he's on my list. That's why he's on my list, because also it wasn't just a parody. It wasn't like a Wayans Brothers parody performance of something just to play it for laughs. There was heart. There, you had sympathy for the character at times.
Right.
Like, there, it was an accomplished performance. So, yeah, I think that he is going to get an award or two, and I think it's going to be very awkward because the guy that he's portraying does not deserve any awards of any kind, minus maybe some Razzies, but in my humble opinion, based on one film that I've seen.
True.
Yeah, so that was my second one, and then my honorable mention, and this was just a fun one, honorable mention I gave to Taika Waititi. For playing Korg in Thor Ragnarok, because to me, like, I loved the film.
Yeah.
But Korg was absolutely a standout character.
Yeah.
And I won't forget him anytime soon. So he got honorable mention for me. Well, Eddie, how about you?
Well, here's the thing. You guys both knocked out two of mine. I've already mentioned Gal Gadot as standout in that entire franchise. Like, literally, they should give her an Oscar just for making people like the DC franchise. Because,
oh, she didn't do that. They like Wonder Woman. They don't like the franchise.
True, very true.
I see what you're saying, though.
Yeah, the other one, obviously, was James Franco. That performance as Tommy Wiseau stands out above many other performances that I've seen of people trying to portray real-life people. So that was interesting to be able to actually look at myself and say, I'm going to actually say on the podcast that James Franco as James Wiseau.
Please, can we get that on a t-shirt?
James Wiseau. James Franco portraying Tommy Wiseau is one of the standout performances for me.
James Wiseau.
I actually had four in mind. So those are my first two. My third one, and I think me and Spence, I think we've talked about it before. Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out. His performance in that movie was really great. Yeah. Chad, I know you haven't seen it, but I have it at home, and I'm going to put you in front of the TV, and we're going
to
watch
it. I got it for you.
I know.
So you could show it to me, and you still didn't.
Hey,
Thank you.
Holidays happened. But no, his role in that film was just so incredible. Like, just his ability to process everything in the way... just the way his character is easily being able, receiving a lot of what is happening throughout the film and how he processes it and how it's almost synchronized with the audience in terms of when he realizes it, you realize it at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so it creates that experience all the more intimate because it's not just like, oh, well, duh, yeah, that's what's happening. Oh, yeah, well, okay, yeah. If you go into the film with an open mind and you're ready to see what's going on, then the film allows you to, you know, pace with the character, and it's a great experience all the way from beginning to end. Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't wait to see it someday.
True. My last choice is from one of the movies that we've mentioned, but the opposite person, and that happens to be Doug Jones. And I have to say, his role as playing the creature from The Shape of Water was pretty standout for me because... he looked like the creature. He seemed like the creature. His performance... Doug Jones is known as the man to play most creatures. He's had a stint throughout most films where they had practical effect
Yeah, I think that's creatures. The thing to note is that it's practical effects first. Obviously, it is enhanced digitally. True. I mean, there are they add layers to the everything, but he was in a costume.
Yeah, he was in a
prosthetic
suit.
Makeup and a costume. Playing that role, he wasn't in a like a unitard with dots all over it so that a computer could capture it and then create something a la Andy Serkis in Planet of the Apes or something.
No disrespect to Andy Serkis, you know, he's also a king in his own field, but this is the realm of practical effects and, like Chad said, actual prosthetics and a suit, you know, like the days of old. So I think Doug Jones is an incredible performer, and I think this was a standout performance for him. Now we go on to the other side of this ruler here, and we talk about worst performances from the year.
Why do I get so giddy when the word worst comes up? I'm like, oh, I cannot wait.
I only have two, and I'm pretty sure you guys probably have a ton more, but I only have two that I could think of right off the top of my head that really stood out as just really bad and unbelievable performances. So I'll jump out first real
quick.
Do
it.
One of them is... Danny McBride in Alien Covenant. That man, I...
You had to pick one single person out of that movie?
Because out of everybody else that's processing things and things like that, there's actual, like, acting going on. The man finds out his wife is dead, and he's like, whatever, and he decides to literally crash an entire ship into the planet just to get there quicker. And it's like, where's the logic in any of this? I get that you have to have, you know, writers to create all that, but I mean, I didn't believe for once that, number one, he was a pilot of a spaceship, and number two, that he was married, and number three, that he cared. So,
well, that was the thing that was weird about that movie to me. Just a brief sidebar. They released an entire scene months in advance of the film that you assume is a scene in the film, but it's not, where it introduces you to how they've all been coupled up. Mm-hmm. Over the course of their journey across the stars. And so by the time we saw the film, I had forgotten who's with whom.
Yeah.
But I assumed that scene would be in the movie, and it's not.
Yeah, no, the
like
scene...
Like, nowhere to be
supposed,
seen.
Yeah, the place
so you're
where it's
supposed,
supposed
to infer, be. You're either supposed to have seen that scene
yep.
and remembered to remember it, or you're supposed to infer by what they're doing and how they're talking to each other, and it's not as obvious... as you need it to be. So I do agree with you on the whole, like, wait, what? why are they doing this? Because I didn't realize the strength of that connection.
Yeah. And my
also that movie just was confusing in a lot of ways to me. But I almost did, to go back briefly to the best performance, I almost did also give a second honorable mention for Michael Fassbender for the flute playing or recorder or whatever he was playing, the pipe or whatever it was, where he was doing both sides of the dynamic between the two android characters.
Yeah.
That scene in particular really stood out to me as memorable. The rest of the movie I could throw away in the garbage and never worry about again.
My second performer was somebody who was... I got a booger. I'm just letting everybody know on the podcast. I'm picking my nose.
Wow.
The second person...
I don't know how to recover from that, Spence.
You just move forward and hope for the best, really.
It's true. My second performer that I feel just was totally off, not only for the film that it was in, but for the period that the film was in and everything. Tom Hiddleston's performance in Kong Skull Island. I was not a fan. I didn't believe for once that he was a tracker or any kind of tough guy. Not that Tom Hiddleston's not a muscular or whatever type of individual, but that's not his strong suit. That's not where his strengths lie. And to create a film where one of the key individuals that I am supposed to believe will get everybody through this is somebody the size of Loki, just didn't seem plausible to me. And his performance throughout that that entire film just didn't seem like it made a lot of sense. Like, I would have considered more so John Goodman to play his role and Tom Hiddleston to play John Goodman's role. That would have made more sense to me.
Interesting.
In the grand scheme of it all, I think that's what would have worked for me. But we got Tom Hiddleston to play Gaston for some reason in this aspect. The tough tracker hunter.
Oh, dude. I was like, he wasn't Gaston. That was somebody else.
And I
see what you're saying.
It fell short for me, and quite a bit so, because I really, really enjoyed that movie, and that was the only complaint that I had.
Yeah, the creature work on Kong himself was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Far better than I had expected it to be.
What about you, Spence? Let's talk about worst performers.
Worst.
Other than your history of Hallmark movie.
Yeah, we can't put that on there yet because I haven't seen it. But I did try to I tried to start seeing more movies last year, but I kind of avoided ones. I'm like, well, that can't be good, or it looks not as good. So I only have one person on my list, and that one is Laura Dern from Last Jedi for Vice Admiral Holdo.
Yeah.
Even though she had one of the coolest scenes in the movie, like...
No. The ship had one of the coolest scenes in the movie.
She had to push the button, though.
They could have put a monkey in that seat for all we knew, and that scene would have still been great.
Or, as so many people have pointed out, a droid.
True.
Not that droid lives don't matter, because I'm sure that they do. But they could have put they could have done autopilot or, I don't know, C-3PO with his magic color-changing arm. I mean, just something.
Yes. Anything.
Yeah,
it's in a faraway galaxy with robots and everything else. Nobody was able to install cruise control on this bad boy?
Nope.
That's all I'm saying.
You had to have purple hair.
You had to have purple hair. All right, Chadley.
Okay, so this is quite possibly... No, it's not my favorite, but it's one of my favorite choices because of how anachronistic it is.
Okay.
So worst performance. I am awarding this category in its entirety to Sir... Anthony Hopkins for his role in Transformers The Last Knight, which didn't make a lick of sense. The movie didn't make sense. His role really didn't make sense. And why somebody of his stature would even agree to do that role in that movie makes the least sense of all. So he gets the entire pie on that one from me.
Wow.
Pie to the face, Sir Anthony Hopkins. I expected better of you.
The only reason why I didn't choose Sir Anthony Hopkins was because I didn't really think that entire movie was even really worth mentioning individually. I had to look at it.
Oh, don't worry. It's not the first time we're going to talk about it. If I had honorable mentions in this category, I would just go through the cast list of that movie.
Well,
including the robots, including especially Optimus Prime, who was a total tool bag.
True. Well, jumping out of worst performance in role, why don't we dive right into most surprising film or films of 2017.
This one's a fun one.
All right, Chad, start us off.
All right, I've got two winners in this category for different reasons. One of them we've talked about already. It's The Disaster Artist. Surprising because given its source material, you would not expect it to be good.
Not at all.
And it is so good.
It is.
Like, granted, the source material is part of what the comparison to the source material, The Room, is part of what makes it so good, but it is so good. It's watchable. It's funny. It's insightful. It's everything that you'd never expect a movie about The Room to be. So that got most surprising for that reason. And the other one for me was Baby Driver. And that was the absolute, like, precise integration of musical cues start to finish, because the main character, Baby, who's played by Ansel Elgort, he has a condition that his way of dealing with it is to listen to music all the time.
He's got tinnitus.
Yeah, but it's not. It's just. I have issues with tinnitus requiring you to listen to music all the time in your ear pods. Gotcha. But he's listening to music the entire time, and that means, because he's the main character, that means the audience is listening to music almost the entire time. And the times when you're not hearing music, there's a reason for it. There's a strategic storytelling purpose behind all the songs, all the beats. The pacing of the story follows the beats of the songs. There's just so much to enjoy and appreciate about the level of craftsmanship that went into making that film. Even though I'm not super fond of how gruesome some of the scenes ultimately get, you know, toward the end of the film.
Yeah.
But the craftsmanship for Edgar Wright and his team behind the scenes was impeccable, and it was a real standout film for me in 2017.
I have to agree on both those. I actually have both of those films on my list. The Disaster Artist standing kind of at the top of that pile above the other ones, because of the fact that we've talked about this on the last episode. This film was one of those types of movies where, knowing its source material, and or at least where it's pulling some of its source material from, and the individual it's, you know, based on, I was not looking forward to it at all. Nor was I looking forward to seeing James Franco. Period. I've already stated that I'm not.
You mean James Wiseau?
James Wiseau, yes. Because I'm not a fan of James Franco. I wasn't a fan of his humor prior to this movie, and I wasn't really looking forward to seeing him and Seth Rogen do the same penis jokes in this movie. So my thoughts were, oh, great, it's just going to be another one of those. And as you can tell with me already having James Franco in my best performance and role category, this movie seriously blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, of course, obviously with Baby Driver, the soundtrack to that movie being so precisely synced with the actions that are going on throughout the entire film, it was incredible. I would have enjoyed seeing this in terms of, like, musical-wise, because it's not a musical, but it's driven by music.
It's not, but it is, in a way.
Exactly.
Like, it's not, but it's so close without the singing part. The characters don't sing.
No.
But if the characters did sing, it would be a musical, because in musicals, you use music to tell the story in addition to dialogue and dancing and whatnot.
What about you, Spence?
Okay. I only have one on my list, and that is Get Out as my most surprising movie.
Ah.
So, just so everyone knows, I'm a black guy.
What? Hold on. You didn't tell me, Chad. He's been on this show twice.
What are you saying, Eddie?
Yeah, what are you saying, Eddie?
That's great. It's wonderful. Go on.
I love how the live mic makes him behave, because we all know that Eddie is a conniving young man.
I don't know what he's talking about.
And he likes to push buttons, but not when it's on the record.
Yeah, because then I could just replay it and then
you could
pity points.
That's right.
Apparently I can't. Yeah, no, this one was surprising to me. Like,
so tell me again about your Hallmark movie that you liked. Go ahead. Sorry.
We're not talking about that right now. Just so you know. Sir. Okay, so Get Out. Yeah. I heard it was good. And so I went in. I was like, okay, let's see how this goes. But, like, this movie spoke to me in such a way that I have never had a movie speak to me. And I, like I have no idea how it spoke to other people either. Because, like, you know, there's some movies where you're like, oh, this is a good movie. Other people will like it. But this one, I'm like, I don't know. Because, like, it spoke to, like, my own life experience in a way that I have never had before. Like, there are some things that this character goes through that I've had happen to me. And I'm like, this is my life on the screen. And I don't know how to take this.
Yeah.
And so it was just...
I feel it's such surprising. A disadvantage right now because Eddie hasn't shown me this movie.
Well, seeing as the movie...
After I gifted it to him.
The movie had debuted back in February of 2017, so you technically had had at least 11 months to see it.
Wow.
Just saying. You are a film philosopher, Chad. There are certain expectations. Just saying.
I gave you the movie as a gift. I will not be guilt-tripped after that.
No, but I you know what? I have to agree with Spencer on this one. Like, this movie is so profound because yes, it speaks to the African American plight that is still currently going on in America today, but on a certain level. So I'm Mexican, or I'm Hispanic, to be more politically correct, just in case anybody out there. But because of my heritage and my ethnicity and how I grew up, I've had certain instances like this. I've had certain situations, and seeing how this was being portrayed and going to the film with a good friend of mine who happens to also be African American, we were watching it and we were entranced. We were laughing. And it was so great, Chad. I don't mean to, you know, corner your ethnicity at all, but it was so wonderful seeing these certain instances that happened and seeing the white people in the theater just be so confused and we're laughing our heads off and they're looking around wondering, why is that so funny? What's going on? And I am just busting up. And the movie really does speak to you on a very unique and special level in terms of like where minorities are at currently in this day and age. And it's a really incredible and thought-provoking movie. I really, just a quick side note, I think it gets a huge bad rap for it, for it being classified as a horror film, because I don't think it's a horror film. I've heard several people who've come out and like, oh, I don't like scary movies, I'm not a big horror movie fan. I'm like, you don't have to be a horror movie fan. Get woke. Come on. I was like, you got...
Although I will...
Get
there was
woke. Okay, first of all, yeah, all I heard in that entire story is that you invited somebody else other than your fellow film philosopher to go to this movie.
He invited me. He invited me, and he paid for my ticket, so...
Aha.
He's a lawyer. What am I going to say? No?
Get woke.
Shout out to Harvey.
There is one complaint with that movie, though. And it's like where, like, he's walking downstairs and then someone moves in the background and then they like make this loud chunk, like, noise sound effect that you see in every horror movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why? Like, you didn't have to do that.
He had to do something
match the rest
masses.
Of it. It is interesting, though, that they market it as a horror movie, but it was really more like a culturally subversive commentary piece, you know, like
that's
fascinating, you know, to have heard a little bit while it was out, but a lot after the fact.
And you said that was the only one on your list?
Yep.
Wow.
Because that one was the one that surprised me the most. Like,
well, the goal is to have like a standout on these things, not like eight options, Eddie.
Well, I mean, hey.
So, well, on this one, I only had 7.
That's true. Well, on this one, I only have 6. So I'm just kidding. You're giving me big old eyeballs. So obviously, we've already talked about Baby Driver. That was one on my list, as well as The Disaster Artist. I have 2 more on that list altogether, so 4, if you're counting. One of the most surprising ones for me was It. I thought it was a very surprising film for what it was, for what it set out to do. you're recreating a film, you're recreating a story that the first interpretation was a made-for-TV movie and didn't live up to anything that the original, that the book had originally done, that it had set out to do. And so you have...
minus the whole, like, make people afraid of clowns. Like, that, I think it succeeded still in that. I mean, Tim Curry was nasty.
But the great thing, though,
as a clown, a killer clown. I mean, he was bad.
Oh, no. Tim Curry was incredible. That's the only reason why that movie stands out as what it is. But the book is much more than just about the clown. The clown was just one form it took. And so with this film, it actually expounded on that and it actually dove into the actual fear aspect of Pennywise, the creature. And I thought that was really interesting. I thought it did a really great take on the book. I was surprised because most of the time when you do remakes, especially horror movies, when horror movies are redone, they just get worse and worse and worse. That's just from somebody who's seen several horror movies throughout my lifetime. That is one solid consistency that I can honestly say is true. And this broke that mold. I enjoyed it. I loved it. I went back and saw it two more times after the first time. And I hope to own it soon because it was a great movie. I liked it. And yeah.
There you go. What's your fourth one?
There you go. My fourth one is probably going to be a surprise at this table. Because as much as we talk about superhero films and whatnot, there's a certain franchise that we tend to lean away from. And this year we had this film debut, and surprisingly, it wasn't bad. So I think that's where the surprise comes from, and that's Justice League. Justice League actually was an okay film. And seeing as the direction that they've been going...
Literally, I turned to this guy at the end of the film and I said, is it wrong to say enthusiastically, it was okay?
That's yeah. so sad.
It is sad. It's depressing to think. But I see what you're saying because your expectation was so low.
It was!
That because it was reasonably decent in most of its qualities, that like lifted it way above the low mark that had been set.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Because it is. It's a messy hodgepodge of a film, and it really doesn't work. Like, if you were saying, okay, the other stuff hadn't happened yet, Batman versus Superman, that train wreck didn't happen, Suicide Squad, maybe Harley Quinn had happened, but you didn't have the weird, like, marimba shaking, like, waving around Cara Delevingne, but whatever she was doing, the shimmy as the Enchantress, you know, all that weird stuff wasn't there. But, like, if Justice League was your first... big go, and you were saying, okay, well, if the other ones didn't exist to set the bar that low, and you were just saying, what's a good DC superhero movie look like, and this Justice League came out, I don't think that people would have been as positive. Now, I know there's been a lot of negative. This franchise, this cinematic universe cannot get away from the negative press to save their life, minus Gal Gadot.
Right.
Who is the shining beacon of hope.
That's what
she
we've come to say.
Wonder Woman. Like, she is the character that she plays. I see what you're saying, though.
Yeah.
The bar was set so low because of prior experiences that for it to get to a decent watermark level was, like, a serious accomplishment.
By far. And like we said, the only film that had actually achieved that within this franchise was Wonder Woman. And that was because Wonder Woman was a standout character, not the franchise. And she did not make the franchise better. She made the character better. Mm-hmm. If I can say that. She made Wonder Woman a likable character.
Mm-hmm.
So having this film do a great integration, not only with her role, but also in terms of story development and actual character introduction and creating what I look forward to in Cyborg as a interesting follow-up film, because I'd like to see how Cyborg evolves, because that was probably one of the most interesting aspects of that film. It surprised me. So in that aspect, surprise. So
that was delightful.
Thank you.
Surprise.
But like we said, much like with the best and worst, on the other side of the spectrum, we also have most disappointing films.
Woohoo!
And
sorry, I get really excited.
kind of kicking it off.
I'm a nice guy. I promise I'm a nice guy. I just really, in this role, it's kind of fun to dog on the stuff that doesn't do well.
I'm just going to, I only have three.
For their own fault. Like, oh, very true. It's their fault that they don't do well.
Extremely true. I only have three. I'm pretty sure Chad has about 10 and Spencer, I don't know, but I'll go ahead and kick this off. My first one.
I only have two. Thank you.
Hey. I have one.
Yeah, we don't we don't hate, like, we don't make lists three, so. Within lists within. I want to tally up how many things are on each of our lists and see who didn't really narrow down very far.
Maybe. I didn't.
I feel like I'm doing pretty well because I only had one section that had two.
And
that
you know what, Spencer?
Prince. Everyone else is one.
Go watch A Christmas Prince. In terms of most disappointing.
Go for it.
The top number three, because I have it in three, two, one. Three is War for Planet of the Apes. I expected more from that film, and I did not get it. I thought it was supposed to be much more of this epic battle that was going to culminate in what would be the infamy of Caesar for the future of the Planet of the Apes.
Sure, and it was surprisingly quiet.
It was extremely quiet. I expected Woody Harrelson's character to be a little bit more physical, I guess, and a little bit more integrated with a story.
Right.
And it was very much so a waiting game. The entire film was just leaving me waiting, like, okay, there's got to be something big coming. Okay, something big's got to start.
Agreed. And then the ending is really confusing.
Very confusing.
I mean, not the ending, but the climactic moment of the film is like, wait, what?
So that's number three. Mm-hmm. Number two, The Dark Tower.
Oh, I totally forgot about that movie.
Nope.
Yeah,
I didn't.
That's true. That's right.
Because I had...
I would have three on my list if I had remembered that film. Well, but I've deleted it from my memory bank.
Well, lucky you, because unfortunately it's still stuck in mine. And this film was meant to be so much more in terms of the Stephen King universe. We had talked about that when we had mentioned the film back in August.
I was going to say, we did a review on it And we talked about it a little beforehand because, I mean, this thing is, it was in development for like 13 years or something. Had gone to different production companies and ultimately landed where it landed and like stank
where stank it landed. Bad.
It was not good.
Yeah, this movie was supposed to kick off ultimately what was at the center of Stephen King's, what do we call it? The Stephen Kingdom, if you will.
Which I still maintain that wouldn't have worked to do it that way. The only way that would work is what they did in The Dark Tower, which was like Pennywise Circus in the forest or whatever.
True.
Like, to actually try to integrate, that just, it would be a hot mess.
But the problem is that the film, the book itself, the entire series, that has been confirmed that it is at the center of everything.
It's the nexus.
It is. It's the nexus point for
thankfully, all... though, it exists on its own.
Yes.
Those other ones are like arms out at arm's distance. Like, it's not like the characters are all interacting with each other.
No.
In the Dark Tower series. They're different characters that are unique to the Dark Tower series.
So that's
thus
number
far,
two.
I think.
Plus, Matthew McConaughey and
Idris Elba's...
role, you know, performances in those films were less than expected. So
they didn't have a lot to work with.
They didn't. Number one most disappointing film of 2017.
Go for it.
Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
You got it.
That's it.
I'm like, I know he's gonna get that.
Yeah. That movie stunk to high heaven, and it was a movie that I still, as of today, still have people trying to come up to me and convince me that it was a actual okay movie because I have to turn it like this and I have to pivot it like that. And then if I fold my brain in half this way and I put my heart on the, you know, over here on the, you know, shelf with the rest of the, ultimately I have to jump through hoops to make it seem at all decent.
Sure, mental calisthenics. I mean, that's what all great movies make you do, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what everybody loves.
Especially the mainstream, like the most popular franchise in movie history. That's definitely what it should do, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Definitely.
So this movie was the largest expectation for the entire year of 2017, and it's fitting that this film, being one of the last films that we saw of 2017, was also probably the most, well, was the most disappointing film of 2017.
And I think that's a lot of the reason why it's disappointing is because the expectation was so high.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say beyond just the fact that it's Star Wars and it's the continuation, oh, finally we get to know what Luke's doing because we barely saw him in The Force Awakens.
Right.
But the trailers that were put out for this film, The Last Jedi, did not indicate how off so much of this movie was. It, the trailers made it feel like the most worthy successor to the throne that we've yet seen. And I think that, for me, was a huge factor because I also, it's one of my two movies on this list. Spencer, I don't want to steal too much of your thunder, though, because this is your movie on,
yeah,
this, on this topic, right? This is your one. Well, so take
like,
it away.
I want to piggyback off your trailer comment because like the trailer is very different from the movie because the trailer has focus. And like,
yes.
It's focusing on like Luke and Rey.
Let me just watch the trailer for 2 hours and somewhat minutes. I'll get a better understanding of what they were trying to do.
Basically, yeah.
Because in the movie, we're going in all these offshoots. That, oh gosh, that whole casino thing.
Did not matter at all.
Morocco in space.
And then like Holdo.
Monaco, Morocco, Ginza Biscay. It didn't make sense. Continue, please.
Also, my problems with Vice Admiral Holdo, like, I, like, tell people what you're gonna do when you assume command and people don't know you. Like, build rapport with
also,
the underlings.
Also, if you know that they're tracking the ship and it's not a spy, then what is the threat of telling people why they shouldn't just think they're gonna die by running out of gas?
Yeah.
Yeah, and this has gotta be the slowest car chase in the history of car chases because you have these two spaceships that are literally inching forward little by little, throwing rocks at each other, essentially.
That, I have a number. I did not get to do the episode with you.
No.
Reviewing this film. However, you and I spoke off mic afterward, and without having, at that point, listened yet to the episode, our opinions were very well aligned.
Very much so.
And one of the things that I had a huge problem with, again, we've mentioned before, I like to come at it from a story structure and a writing standpoint. From that angle, there are blatant, like, narrative inconsistencies. Aside from the dialogue being awful.
Atrocious.
Very poorly written.
It's almost like it was a Hallmark movie.
But like there's internal consistency and the spaceship thing, the slowest chase in history,
yeah,
is one of them because a lot of reasons. So minus the fact that they could just like jump in front of them since we know what direction they're moving in and they're not going into like light speed. They're just limping along. So jump in front of them and hit them. But also they specifically say the First Order people, they're like, well, they're just getting out of range of our weapons, which indicates that they're lighter and faster. I think they even say they're lighter and faster, yeah, and they're now out of range. However, they're shooting them the entire time, and they're never getting further away. It's like, oh, they got away from us just enough, yeah, that one time, but let's just like slow our roll and maintain the exact same distance always.
Yeah, they're losing fuel, but we're still filled with fuel.
Also, let's not send our light fighters that can cross the distance, and if they run out of gas, we will be there to pick them up because all we're doing is slowly chasing these little things. There's a lot that didn't work in that movie. Just a lot. There's very little that did work.
Very little.
So, Spencer, any other thoughts on The Last Jedi before I share my second
pick? Oh, no. Go right ahead.
Pick. So, no surprises here. Transformers The Last Knight.
Gonna be honest, I forgot that movie existed.
I know. I only remember because I saw it in a list of movies from 2017 when I was prepping for the show.
The only reason why this film is not on my most disappointing was because I already went in with this mindset that this movie was going to suck.
I did too, and it still ranks. And it outranks The Last Jedi.
It's still lower than that.
I went in with an abysmally low. I was like fighting. I was basically digging my heels in, not wanting to go see this movie. And it still disappointed me. It was so remarkably bad. Like, so bad. I hope that they can resurrect some measure of decency with this new Bumblebee spinoff franchise thing. I'm not convinced that that's going to happen, but Bumblebee to me is the only redeemable aspect of the entire story at this point. And I'm glad that they didn't ultimately have Optimus kill him. But yeah, the whole everything, it was a giant train wreck that didn't work at all for me. So most disappointing. And I would say that actually outranks The Last Jedi.
Really?
For me, yeah.
Wow.
I was remarkably disappointed in The Last Jedi, but because my expectation was very high. Here, I was remarkably disappointed, and my expectation was already at bedrock level. So I think that's really, like, stand out in a bad way.
Yeah, I think for me, I just, because of the such high expectations for Star Wars and what has already, kind of the pedigree that was already set for this franchise and what has come about, like with the last, The Force Awakens, and then even with Rogue One, and then they're like, okay, we're going to do the next episode, and you're already all up here at this high point that you're comfortable with most Star Wars films. And then you watch The Last Jedi, and it was like, okay, we're going to give the script's responsibility to a bunch of kindergartners and have them write out the story. And let's have the purple lady drive a ship into the other ship. And that's what it seemed
okay,
like.
That was the coolest part. Legit visual, though. I mean, it really was.
It was.
Again, but internally inconsistent based on The Force Awakens, where they like light speed into a planet or whatever, and it doesn't shear anything off, or, you know, like whatever happened, or they light speed out of it. Yeah, so there's still like, okay, how do the physics of your universe work? Do you know? Have you decided? Because yeah. I'm saying no, boo boo caca. but it looked cool. Okay, worst film. Can I take this? Because I cheated on this
by
one.
By all means, worst
so,
film of the year.
Next category is worst film of the year. And I cheated, and I'm admitting that I cheated because I selected The Room. And the reason why I selected The Room is because I have successfully avoided it until this year. I viewed The Room in 2017 for the first time ever. And it was so bad. So I have selected The Room. Now, if I hadn't cheated, I would just
Which
be
you
boring.
Just did.
I would be boring you with a rehash of everything I just said for Transformers the last night. So there you go.
Spence, what about you?
Okay, well, this one was already talked about, but my worst film was The Dark Tower. Because if I have to hear that Gunslinger's Creed one more time, I'm going to freak out on
somebody.
Hey,
you know, here's the thing. That Gunslinger's Creed was actually cool before that movie came out because of the books. And yeah, it sucks now. I have to agree. Yeah, like Chad said, one of mine is Transformers The Last Night. That's one of them. The other one, because I only had two on this list, the other worst film of 2017...
Way to control yourself.
Thank you. I try. The other worst film of 2017, in my opinion, that still stands from when we saw it back in March of this year all the way up until January right now of 2018, it's got to be Ghost in the Shell. That was a bootsy
movie. Oh, I forgot
movie.
About that movie.
That movie was redonkulous. Scarlett Johansson's role in that movie made no sense. The whole, just the visuals of that movie looked ridiculous. It's like, okay, we'll pull from The Matrix here, and we'll pull from Blade Runner there, and we'll pull from everywhere else in between. I thought it was just a bad movie. Bad writing, bad direction, bad everything. And yeah, the whitewashing scandal didn't help either.
True. I would agree to a point. Only because I literally forgot that movie existed. So that's got to say something.
And, oh wait, what did you say? You said The Last Night, right?
Dark Tower.
Dark Tower, Dark that's right. Tower. Sorry. I can't rewind this. It's live.
So, you could pay attention.
I am paying attention. I was just...
Obviously not.
This is what happens when you reflect on movies like Ghost in the Shell. You try to like push everything back in and you're like, wait, oh wait, that's important. I need... Oh, never mind. You talking about you know, Dark Tower.
Okay, that's let's just be honest. You do that all the time when I talk.
Spencer, why don't you start it out with best films of the year?
I like this moment of honesty. Let's sit here for a moment.
Oi.
Please go on.
Best films.
Spencer, okay. Start it off for us.
I, once again, only picked one because the category was best film of the year.
Correct. I did the same.
You know what?
I'm with you on this.
Both of you guys can just, whatever. Go ahead. I have three. Go ahead.
You're the one who wrote these categories.
I have three for best film.
You know what? You know what?
Hey, you're going to go last, and I need you to choose one. You don't get three. Ooh.
Good luck with that.
So get thinking. Spencer, go.
Rank them. Okay. Best film for me was Logan of this year.
Ooh, good choice.
That was, it was just such a great movie. It was just a really great way to say goodbye to the character.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was my hands down favorite movie of the year.
I was not considering it for best film because I have one for me personally that outranks it. But for best performance in a role, I wanted to choose the little girl who plays Laura.
Oh,
I wanted
great.
To choose Patrick Stewart, and I wanted to choose Hugh Jackman. So I chose none of them. So I just nulled it all out. But I agree with you. It was absolutely phenomenal.
But then you did the same thing for Sir Anthony Hopkins, and you nulled them all out for in worst performance.
No, I gave him the award because he's better than that. But I said if I did have more people, I would just list the rest of the cast in order. No particular order for that film.
That particular, because that's one of them on my list, so
no,
cross one off.
You get one.
But that that movie, that has got to be the one singular moment where at a press screening of only professionals, you know, in the local area.
What he's saying is he told me to meet him at the movie theater and they kicked me out because I didn't have his same
credential. There's a conversation that we've had of this. We've talked about it.
And Eddie said, bye. Walked his jolly behind right into that movie theater.
That is true. That part is true.
Amazing.
No, but that was the only press screening where all professionals at the end of the film were all wiping their eyes because of how touched they were and moved by the film. And it's an incredible movie, and I can't believe that it's already been, 11 months? Because it was in February. 11 months, and this movie is still talked about as one of the best films of this year, because as much as everything else that has come out since then, in terms of not just in terms of superhero movies, but in terms of just cinematography and writing and direction and performance, like Chad was saying, this movie had it all. It was great.
Well, and it was so, like, I mean, there's much made of what Kevin Feige has accomplished with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and how all the movies interconnect and they tell a big story and you follow characters for years across multiple, you know, storylines and whatever. That is a tremendous accomplishment.
Yeah.
What Logan managed to do in no uncertain terms was point out how long we've all been watching Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. This is the role that made him in a global, like, recognized mainstream performer sense. And he was the understudy, essentially. He was the second guy on the list. The first guy got stuck doing reshoots for Mission Impossible 2. So he couldn't do it. Doug Ray Scott, who was originally cast as Wolverine in the first X-Men film. So Hugh Jackman was called in. And it made his career. I mean, but to see, obviously, through ups and downs, because X3, The Last Stand, happened, as did Wolverine Origins. And, you know, ups and downs, you've literally gone through a whole series of experiences and emotions with this performer in this role in a pseudo-consistent through line. I mean, it's not entirely consistent. Days of Future Past had to fix some things by essentially erasing all this stuff that didn't make any sense. So it is. It's an emotional experience because it's not just this film. I mean, some people probably didn't see all of the other ones or maybe any of the other ones before seeing this one, and they could still respect it for the stylistic reasons of the storytelling, how it's done and what it means. But for those of us who've been following since the year 2000 when X-Men came out and have been following the journey of this performer as this character – you know, it has a whole extra rich layer of meaning and value, I think.
Easily.
And the fact that it was well done totally capitalizes on all of it.
Well, and it was kind of capping in terms of, you know, talking about that. I mean, you got a chance to say goodbye to ultimately two of the most prominent characters from the entire franchise, and that was Patrick Stewart's Professor Xavier and Hugh Jackman as the Wolverine, Logan. And this movie, just like you said, it's been a journey for a lot of people who actually grew up on this. I mean, they were maybe 8 or 9 when they saw the first X-Men film, and they're in their 20s now as this one comes about. And you can easily say that, you know what, this was a film that you grew up with, and seeing this go away like that, seeing that what had happened in this film, it's almost as, I mean, I know it's ridiculous to say, but with people who grow up having a certain affinity to, you know, forms of media, whether if it's reading or watching movies or TV shows or, you know, whatever it may be, people have a special place in their heart for characters that they grow up and they love. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those opportunities where, you know, watching Hugh Jackman actually die as this character who's never died, because that's kind of his power set, actually, you know, bite the bullet in this one, it moves you. So, good choice, Spence.
Yeah.
What about you, Chad? Well,
that's a good choice. So my choice is very self-serving, and I've mentioned it before. My choice is Thor Ragnarok.
That was my other one.
No, no, it was not. You get one.
Can't just get rid of them because we picked.
It was
you guys
not,
are picking them.
No.
Right there. I still have my. So I know what my number one is.
Then you have one.
You have whittled.
You get
them
down. Logan Spencer. Yeah. I get Thor Ragnarok. He gets whatever it is that he still has on his list. Stop he doesn't fair. Get to claim the other two because he didn't do the work. Yeah. We did the work.
Whatever.
No, Thor Ragnarok was delightful. I saw it 4 times or 5. I can't remember.
5 times.
In the theater. I want to see it again. Mm-hmm. Like, if theaters weren't as expensive as they are here in California, I would have probably seen it another 3 times by now.
True.
But I will absolutely own it and watch it on the day that it comes out. I will probably skip recording the podcast because we record on Tuesdays and new movies come out on Tuesdays. So you can find me watching Thor Ragnarok instead of joining you here.
There you go. So the day that we have a special guest is the day that the movie apparently has come out on DVD.
No, I'm not totally serious, but I'm mostly serious about that. I loved pretty much everything about that movie, Jeff Goldblum especially.
Oh, gosh, he was so good in that movie.
It's my birthday. I mean, honestly, Instagram got me the other day when they said starting a new year is like Valkyrie, and it's like her walking on the rainbow bridge with the ship exploding fireworks behind her. It made me laugh and smile and love it all over again. The memory of it.
No, it's true. And it goes back to when we first talked about this movie, the idea of what Thor had been all along prior to this. And him being this Shakespearean type, the character...
He was like the historian.
Yeah.
Essentially. The story function of the Thor movies has been to tell you some of the history of the larger structure and flow of the universe.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
And his role was... The honest answer for this is that his role took himself more seriously than the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that just didn't mesh well with the overwhelmingly fun and, you know, introspective yet funny characters that were everybody else. So you bring in somebody like Taika Waititi, who revamps the entire premise of not only Thor's character and his just the way he is, but the entire universe that they're in, adding people like Korg in it and you know, having people like Valkyrie in there. And mm-hmm. then, of course, Jeff Goldblum. You have the makings of what...
Who isn't known by his character's name, but is known correctly as Jeff Goldblum in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Seriously, I would have... You know,
there's no question. You said it right.
Yeah, exactly.
You have new characters like Korg, Valkyrie, and Jeff Goldblum.
Yep.
Absolutely. I'm with you.
Yeah.
So this film, like, if anything, this has become the new Guardians of the Galaxy, if you will, in terms of revamping this property that could have gone stale,
sure.
Honestly.
Mm-hmm. Could have easily had already, I think, for a lot of people after the second one. And to get fresh life like this is incredible.
Yeah. Well, you guys got your ones. So my one, after Thor and Logan, is got to be a film I just saw back in November. And yes... It's an animated film, but this film does so much that it's worked on so many different levels, and that's Coco. Pixar's Coco. That movie is a testament to not only my culture and my traditions that have been long past, but it was also a reminder of where I came from and also where I'm at currently, if that kind of makes any sense as well. Just watching the process of what's going on and the idea. I think for me, one of the reasons why Coco stands out so much is not only the incredible storytelling, the out of this world CGI that they use in this film, and the just profound voice acting cast that they use both for the English version and the Spanish dubbed version. Looking at that, and it's like, oh my gosh, they got all these really well-known individuals and singers and whatnot to play certain roles. I also think that what also makes this one of the best films of the year is also the situation in terms of where, you know, life was at for me, and seeing this film and being able to translate that and kind of having, you hear from time to time how people say, oh, you know, oh, this person got me through this dark time, or this, you know, song got me through the, you know, and you think it's kind of like ridiculous and cliche, but this movie was a part of, you know, the transition that I had going on in my life at the time, and watching it was so profound that I found myself crying in the middle of the, and it's funny because you can reflect back on this. My wife makes fun of me still about this, but you can reflect back on the episode. I found myself crying in the center of the movie at the very middle, and my wife turns to me. She's like, "Why are you crying?" And I'm like, it's, you know, and she turns and she's watching the movie, and then she starts crying, and then it's like, yes, you go, it's not just me. I'm not just losing it. So this movie is extremely profound, and it's so wonderful, and it's a movie that as soon as it makes it to, you know, home video, not only do I plan to buy it for myself, but I also plan to buy copies for family members that I know would actually enjoy it and really love seeing the their tradition and their, you know, heritage, you know, portrayed respectfully in a Pixar film. So that's my best film.
I'm sure I would be in total agreement with you. Unfortunately, I still haven't seen it. You and I had similar transition experiences with loved ones this year. And mine was right before this movie came out. Yours wasn't too far earlier than that, but I have not yet, because I all the cultural stuff I can absolutely respect. I don't have as much of a personal connection to the cultural things. Because unfortunately, I am white. I'm fine being white. I don't. It's not a bad thing. It can be for some people, but not for me. But I don't know. Anyway, so I don't have the cultural connections to it. But I know that those emotional, like the familial, all of that, I know it's going to get me hardcore. So like a baby, I have been avoiding that movie so far. Although I do really want to see it, because based on what you and your lovely wife Doris mentioned during our episode, because she joined us for that one, and what I've heard from other people, it's a remarkable film.
The movie was so good. Like, I was so mad that I was crying in the theater over this movie, because, like, this movie just knows how to, like, get at you. Like, even though I don't, like, identify with, like, a lot of the culture stuff, like, it really, like, was a beautiful movie.
And it's not like
some things are universal.
And like Spencer was saying, it wasn't intentionally trying to make you become emotional. It's just the story is so beautiful and how it transpires. It really resonates with anybody who has seen it. So that is our 2017 year in review. Of course, as we look forward to 2018, there's incredible things that we have to look forward to in terms of cinema. And actually, we're going to take a quick second and kind of jump into a couple of the films that we're excited for 2018. I know for me, just right off the bat, you have Ready Player One that's coming out in March. Black Panther, obviously, February. But there are three other ones. I have five for this one altogether, so nobody kill me. You have Predator, the remake of Predator, the original, by the original director who directed the first Predator, Shane Black. So that's going to be really interesting. You have another remake, Halloween. I know what I said about remakes in terms of horror films or whatever, but Halloween is actually going to
be... It's going to be a fun year, y'all.
It is. Halloween will actually be a continuation from the Laurie Strode character's storyline. And it actually puts John Carpenter back into the writing seat. So John Carpenter is actually going to be as a part of the staff to create this film. And the last one that I'm really looking forward to is The God Particle, which is the third film in the Cloverfield franchise that is going to debut in February. It's not even going to debut like later. It's going to be in like a month. And the way they always do this...
in like a month.
The way they always do these
Have
films...
Have they done any teasers yet?
They see, that's the thing. They always wait until 2 weeks before the film comes out to give teasers and trailers. That's the way they've always done with like Cloverfield and 10 Cloverfield Lane. They don't release any of the teasers or the trailers or the TV spots until like 2 weeks before.
I really appreciate that because some people were like, hey, we're having a movie in 5 months. I'm like, I'm supposed to remember this for 5 months?
Like, that looks so cool. When am I going to be able to see it? Oh, you know, next year.
Right.
That's how I felt with Ready Player One. Like, I was so upset. I was like, what?
Yeah, that was annoying.
Yeah.
I was really
annoying. That was annoying.
So those are mine. What about you, Spencer?
All right, let's see. You already mentioned Black Panther and Ready Player One.
Mm-hmm.
My other three are Infinity War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really excited about that one. Deadpool 2, that comes out in June. Kind of interested in seeing what they're doing with that. And then Wreck-It Ralph 2, because the first one was pretty good, and I'm interested in seeing where they're going to go.
Isn't it Ralph Breaks the Internet? Or Wreck-It
like
Ralph
that.
Breaks the Internet, I think is what it's called.
I don't know how I feel about that title, but okay.
I don't know either, but... I don't know. Like, I like the first Wreck-It Ralph. I'm hoping that the second one lives up to it, but who knows? I mean, like you said, he's going into the internet, so...
Well, and the good news is they didn't rush this one through. Like, they started developing it right after the first one did well, and it's been several years. So hopefully... given its, you know, kind of longer gestation process, if you will, than most sequels that are just like churn and burn, just get it out so that people don't forget how much they love the other one.
Yeah.
Hopefully that means that it's got some good stuff in it. Because the first one was, it was one of those that was surprisingly good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You expected it to be like fun, but you didn't expect for it to be as good as it was. I didn't.
And quick note, I have failed to mention most of the major Marvel films, because I know Chad will have all of those on his list, so I wanted him to have his time in the sun for these particular films. But I do have to mention Deadpool 2 slipped my mind. I'm excited to see that one as well. That one's going to be a really interesting one with the introduction of Cable, as well as Domino. And they haven't even listed who the main antagonist is going to be for that film, so... it's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Chadley.
I did not go all Marvel, thank you. I did have Black Panther, and I did have Infinity War. Mm-hmm. Those are just givens. There's no way those aren't going to be on my list. The other three are three that have not been mentioned yet, so I'm glad that we had some, you know, diversity. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be as good as Jurassic World was. Mm-hmm. But I've loved dinosaurs since I was 4 or maybe 3. So there's no way I'm not going to get excited and want to go see it. I mean,
the story goes from his mom that when he came out of the womb, he said, "Rawr." So it just
something like that. And then in the Marvel vein, but Fox Marvel, X-Men Dark Phoenix.
That's right.
Super excited about that, where they're going to hopefully redeem the Phoenix storyline from X3, which, as previously mentioned, was terrible. And then my fifth one is actually coming out this month. It's called 12 Strong. It's the...
that's right.
The special forces operators that rode horses against tanks in Afghanistan right after 9/11.
Yeah.
So Chris Hemsworth. Chris Hemsworth is the leader of the group, and it's got some other prominent performers in it as well. But I'm really... thankfully... I've never had to serve in the military. I know that many people who have served in the military find movies like that hard to go to because it brings up things that are better left not brought up. But as someone who has only ever been an observer and supporter, but observer of, you know, protecting our freedoms and doing the hard things and facing situations where people that you come to know and respect and even love are no longer with you very suddenly.
Yeah.
All of that, I mean, it's always very inspirational to me, even the hard movies. I like watching them because I think that those stories are important and they do matter. So I'm fascinated. I never knew about this story to begin with. I mean, it's based on a real story, so I never knew that this really small group of guys went into like one of the thorniest, craziest war areas in the world for generations, and did not have like full backup and support, and had to survive. So I'm excited to see it this month.
That's true, and this film only started showing trailers, I think, a month ago.
Yeah, something like right before Thanksgiving, I think.
So, yeah, there you go. Those are our films that we're excited for 2018. Let us know what you thought about our list for 2017. Did you agree with it? Do you not agree with it? Do you think Spencer should stop watching Hallmark movies? Let us know on Facebook or on Instagram as well, too. We post there. And on Twitter at facebook.com/...
Spencer's never coming back. No, and that's our loss. That's our loss.
Or on Twitter at twitter.com/philosophy101. Speaking of Spencer not coming back, thank you, Spencer, for coming back.
Yeah, I'm sure you're real thankful.
This was a fun episode. And you know what? Like we said, we have so much to look forward to for 2018, not just in the major films, but even in the independent films. And you know what? We are totally on the lookout. So if you know of a film we don't know about, please let us know. If we haven't mentioned it or if it's something that's slipping under the radar for most mainstream, we'd love to hear it. I'd like to hear it. So, but yeah, this is fun. And like I said, we're totally looking forward to the new year.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a good one.
Mm-hmm. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
Class dismissed.